Okay, guys, so we got a lot of New York Rangers stuff to get into today. We got a lot of Toronto Maple Leafs, Montreal Canadiens stuff to get into today. Those two teams face off against each other this evening. Part of a six-game Thursday around the NHL. Welcome to Hockey Central, everyone. Thanks for joining us. Glad to have you aboard. Justin, Stewie. You know, Stewie and I were working that Habs-Sens game last night.
And that was being played?
That game was being played. We were actually working it. And I don't know about you, Stewie, but I watched the Caps-Rangers probably a little bit more than I watched the Sens and Habs in our green room last night. How about you?
Yeah, that was the case here. We kept getting updates because we have the live feed and we're like, oh, there's a fight coming, there's a fight coming, there's a fight coming. So we sort of had the heads up when it was coming, which was great to see for sure.
All right, so the game is won by the Washington Capitals. The fights won by the Washington Capitals. Suspension coming to Pavel Buchnevich of the New York Rangers. But a big answer by the New York Rangers last night. After what happened on Monday, Elliot Friedman's going to stop by here in a couple of moments from Hockey Night and 31 Thoughts. But Justin, what did you make of the Ranger response specifically? I think there's a lot of hockey fans that don't have time for that, that thought it was an embarrassment, it was a disgrace, it was a blight on the game, a blemish. How did you see it?
Well, I'm trying to not sit on the fence about it, but just recognize a whole bunch of things about it that, all right, fine, I recognize that people can call it dumb. At the same time, I absolutely respect the Rangers players for it. I mean, you know, they're protecting their guy, their star player, their teammate, and saying they won't roll over, even if not the bigger, tougher team. They weren't going to just take it lying down. So I respected the response. I thought it was probably a galvanizing event for both locker rooms. I'm sure everyone's sitting there proud of each other at the intermission, and I think fans enjoyed it. I don't know, man. I get all the sentiment against it, but I can't say I wasn't riveted to the television last night.
So right off the bat, Stewie, Blackwell goes with Hagelin, DiGiuseppe goes with Hathaway, Rooney goes with Dowd. How does that, I mean, you played in the NHL, how does that come together? Do both teams know? Do they talk at the face-off? Like 1 second in, they're going for it. How does that come together?
Well, I think it starts off on Twitter where they all get on their ghost accounts and say, hey, I'm going to fight you, you're going to fight me. But I don't think it was really that well planned out. I think probably maybe a quick glance in warm-ups, but I think it all came together after the draw because you saw Chara sort of looking for a dance partner and everyone's like, no, we're not fighting you, I'm fighting these guys too. So I like it that it was a team response and it wasn't one guy, you know, tasked with the responsibility of doing it. That shows that they're a great team, close-knit group too, because I've rather that response, everyone steps up as a group as opposed to one guy doing it or someone doing something like running the goalie and making a big debauchery of the game. So good response by the New York Rangers. And is it over? The question is it over? I hope no. It's over. Let's get back to playing hockey. The best tweet that I saw today, and it actually hit home to me, is like, do you remember when hockey was fun? And this is not fun talking about every day. It's like, it's high stress because I've been in these situations and it's something that it's like, man, people can really, really get hurt. I played in a time where guys, they can knock you out of the season. They can literally break your face. So I get a little bit anxious talking about it. So let's get back to having some fun, Jeff. Come on.
No, not going to happen. And this is not fun for the New York Rangers. They have now been fined. We're wondering what the number was going to be. I think we had the over under at $100,000 and pretty much all of us took north of $100,000, and it is $250,000. The NHL fining the Rangers for their comments on Tuesday about the lack of suspension for Tom Wilson on Artemi Panarin. This is the quote from the NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman. Public comments of the nature issued by the Rangers that were personal in nature and demeaning of a league executive will not be tolerated. While we don't expect our clubs to agree with every decision rendered by the Department of Player Safety, the extent to which the Rangers expressed their disagreement was unacceptable. It is terribly unfair to question George Parros' professionalism and dedication to his role and the Department of Player Safety. So this story continues. So it's a $250,000 fine for the lack of suspension to Tom Wilson on Tuesday. Today, there's a hearing, Pavel Buchnevich, for his high stick on Anthony Mantha. Expectations is Pavel Buchnevich will be suspended for that, I would have to imagine, and strongly so. Do we see, I wonder, another comment from the New York Rangers, knowing that these comments originally, one would assume, and this is a big assumption on my part, but I'm pretty safe making it, it could come right from the top in Jimmy Dolan. Like, this is that was a James Dolan note. I can't see Jeff Gorton or John Davidson sending that note out the other day. I wonder if there will be something subsequent once the Pavel Buchnevich decision comes down by George Parros, which, to your point, Stewie, it's over. No, in the words of Anthony Stewart, it's on. And this isn't going to stop. This is going to continue because the Rangers have themselves a Tom Wilson problem, as we talked about, and they're going to try to address it. Justin, what do you think of the $250,000 fine?
Great. You cannot criticize a in-game official in a post-game interview, let alone go at the head of a department and attack them personally like the Rangers did in a formal statement. It was ridiculous. And they deserved every penny they're getting fined for that, which that is a pretty penny. So no, I don't think there's going to be any response from the Rangers to whatever happens next. I think that's
that
should be a piece of duct tape across the mouth. I know Dolan's reputation, but boy, that's a lot of money to think he's going to come back begging for more.
Let's get Elliot Friedman here in the conversation from Hockey Night in 31 Thoughts. Elliot Friedman with us on Hockey Central. Elliot, just saw the news just breaking a couple of moments ago. The Rangers fined $250,000 for comments they made on Tuesday. This is before the dismissal of John Davidson and Jeff Gorton. We will get there. But what do you make of the $250,000 fine? And if/when Pavel Buchnevich is suspended, do we expect another comment from the Rangers? And albeit it would be another expensive comment, but nonetheless.
Yeah, quite the week, expensive week for New York. Lots of severance and now $250,000 fine. I think we all expected this. I don't know anybody who thought they weren't going to get fined. I remember in San Jose when they got fined in the playoffs in 2013 for a much milder article questioning a Rafi Torres suspension, they got $100,000. So I don't think anybody was surprised by this. I think we were just wondering what the number would be. Like, I had some people who thought that they might get $1 million because there's such a beef between James Dolan and the NHL. Their relationship hasn't always been great. So it obviously wasn't that. I don't think they're going to say anything else. I mean, nothing James Dolan does would surprise me. Mm-hmm. He's not afraid to pick a fight, even if it's one that most people don't agree with. But I would be surprised if they released another statement.
But you know what's going to happen with Rangers fans here with this Pavel Buchnevich situation, and there is a hearing for his high stick to Anthony Mantha. Like, we can all see George Parros suspending Pavel Buchnevich, and we can all see Rangers fans, Elliot, going absolutely banana sandwich over it.
Yeah, that's going to happen if he does get suspended. And I'm with you, Jeff. I think it's more likely than not he does. I retweeted the announcement this morning on the player safety account that he had a hearing, and I don't really check replies often, but I did look at those ones, and it was as expected. And, I think in this day and age, no matter what you do, there's going to be people who hate it on social media. So you might as well just do it, whatever you think is right, whatever you think makes sense, and just live with it, because people are all, you could do the greatest thing in the world, and some people are going to hate the way you do it. So you just have to deal with the outcome.
Good advice Stewie, by the way. That's some good advice for Stewie.
He checks his replies. He's checking for all the pictures of him that people are posting. But
I look for your gifts to see whose face you put my whose body you put my face on with your crazy app that you do that stuff with.
Power to the BlackBerry. But so do you consider this beef over between the Capitals and the Rangers, or do you see it spilling into next year? And also, do you see the market for players with a truculent background going up this offseason in free agency?
You know, Anthony, I think there will probably be always something between some of those players. I mean, you played at that level, right? You know, if you felt somebody wronged you, how long did it take for that to settle?
Never.
See, that's the thing. Like, I think probably some of those guys last night, that was enough. You saw the Rangers tweet out a nice message about the TJ Oshie video, right? So I think that in some ways the water calms. But, like, I'm with you. Like, sometimes I really try not to hold grudges, but I've held some grudges for a very long time. Everybody's different. Some people will say that's enough, but there'll be plenty of people who will say, no, it's not, and it goes longer than this.
Just of the mind myself that, like, not many of those guys on the Rangers wanted to fight last night. They worked up the courage to do it. I can't see them wanting more. And then anyone who comes in is going to be a hired mercenary and won't have those same feelings. I'm hopeful that that was the end of it, just on my own two cents on that. Elliot, just looking at the Rangers situation in general here, obviously there was something that James Dolan didn't like about what Jeff Gorton and John Davidson were doing. Davidson had been there less than 2 years. What happened there?
Well, I thought it was very interesting today that on the Zoom call that the Rangers had with the media, it wasn't just Chris Drury, it was also Glenn Sather. So it's hard for me to look at this and not wonder what Glenn Sather's role was in all of this. Jim Dolan loves Glenn Sather. He did since the moment he hired him. And, you know, there were times where the fans weren't very happy with Glenn Sather, but Jim Dolan generally was. He really thinks highly of him, and he always has. And, you know, I wonder, you know, how Sather felt. I do think his role in this is not insignificant. But what it comes down to is, we got a situation where, you know, the NHL fans don't really – if you don't follow the NBA, you don't really understand who James Dolan is and what he's like. If you follow the NBA and you know the Knicks, you know he is impulsive. You know he is reactionary. This is a guy who gave Larry Brown a huge contract and fired him after a year. He's – you know, he has – change the course of their direction with the Knicks time and time and time again, and in ways that drives Knicks fans crazy. Generally, he's left the Rangers alone, and this time he decided not to. He was convinced that they were moving too slowly. He was convinced that they should be better than they are, and I think John Davidson and Jeff Gorton resisted that. They were saying, nope, slow and steady is the right move here. And I think Dolan just finally ran out of patience and said, nope, it isn't. And, you know, if anything Monday night did, it might have accelerated the timing, but this was coming. There's no question in my mind with everything I found out in the last 24 hours, Justin, this was coming.
So the way I look at it now, with a clearer picture 24 hours later, Elliot, to your point, this was coming. What happened on Monday was the last straw, but this was coming perhaps after the season was done.
Yeah.
I think there was an emotional moment for James Dolan where he said, I have to do something right now. I have to do something. I don't like what's happened here. I don't like this team. I don't like the response. I need to do something. And even though I was planning on doing this after the season, I'm doing it now. And when you mentioned too slow, mm-hmm. And that letter went out from Jeff Gorton and Glenn Sather, February 2018. So you look at the four seasons and you say they got Panarin, they've got Adam Fox, they've got Lafreniere, Zibanejad, Shesterkin, Kako, like that's the foundation of a really good hockey team for a lot of years. Mm-hmm. And Chris Drury is walking into this situation. He's walking into a really good team that's about to become an excellent team. Mm-hmm. When I hear too slow, need to move faster, you know, the first thing that pops into my mind, Friege, Jack mm-hmm. Eichel.
Well, the thing about that is that they were in on Eichel before this, right?
Yep.
It's not like, you know, if I don't think you're wrong, Jeff, necessarily, but it's not like they were afraid to go after Eichel. They made the Sabres an offer on Eichel in the offseason. Mm-hmm. And it's one that at least made the Sabres think before they just ultimately decided they weren't ready to do the move yet. So that's what it comes down to, is that I don't think that Chris Drury would be any more or less necessarily inclined to make a move for Eichel. I think the organization already was prepared to do that. And I think they will. They were looking at, okay, if we want to add a center, you know, what are our options? Now, the other thing, too, is don't forget, they're going to have a big contract to do with Fox in a year or two. They've got to make a decision on Zibanejad. So while they do have some cap room, there are big decisions to come. But, you know, I don't. To me, that wasn't the risk, the concern. They were willing to do that. But, yes, I do think they will try to make some kind of a splash. It certainly does appear that way.
It does feel, Elliot, Stu, I'm going to hand this back to you in 1 second. It does feel like this might be, I don't know if like a strong return, but at least a nudging towards, how should I say it, the old Rangers way of doing business. If there's a big name on the market, the Rangers are in there for now. I say this after they, you know, went out a couple of years ago and picked up Artemi Panarin. But if there are big names available, the Rangers were always in every conversation. Do we see a return to that now?
I think there's no other way to interpret it, right?
Stewie.
Okay. So on the Washington Capitals front, do you see, you know, management or ownership coming to Tom Wilson and saying, hey, you know what? The waters are too hot right now. You need to tone it down just until the waters cool, or they're going to live by it because, you know, sometimes he does cross the line, but that's what makes him one of the, you know, most unique players in the league.
Well, I think if you heard them in the aftermath, Peter Laviolette said on Tuesday, he's got to recognize the he said it very calmly. But he did say, you know, he's got to recognize that the attention is on him and he has to understand that. I don't know if you watched Stewie Lars Eller yesterday, but he went into a long, passionate defense of Wilson, which, you know, I watched it all. And, you know, last night, you know, some people didn't like that I pointed this out, but he had a chance to bury Buchnevich in the first period. It was very similar to the play he got suspended for Brandon Carlo, and he peeled off. And what my issue and why I feel that he should have been suspended is that he lost his composure. He lost his temper. And he should have known better than to do what he did to Panarin. And I saw a player last night who clearly – when he keeps his cool.
Bum, ba, da, bum.
Sorry. I think he should be held to that standard. He knows what he should do and what should not do. I think he should be held to that standard. And I think the Capitals will work on him with that. Stewie, I got to tell you something. I think the bigger story in Washington internally might end up being what to do with Kuznetsov than Wilson.
Yeah, it does.
What's up with Kuznetsov there? Just getting in trouble too much with the team?
I think so. Like, this COVID thing, him on the COVID list is very weird. I think we're all kind of wondering if he broke protocols here or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that was my impression. Just one guy there, they benched him, like maybe went out. I don't know. That's speculating, but it did seem a little bit strange to me. Kind of going up the ladder a little bit, looking at the NHL and this whole situation. You know, I'm thinking about two things. One is that Brian Burke once said that you can only do the job of the head of Department of Player Safety for so long before it's just time. You know, that was his case with that. And the other one is the most valuable franchise in the NHL just put out a statement calling for the head of the Department of Player Safety. How do you think the NHL feels about this whole everything? Everything that's happened here, how the department's handled it, where they want to go from here as a league?
I think that's a great question. I think it's a great question, Justin. You know, there were a lot of reactions to what happened last night. I'll tell you something. I disagreed with not suspending him. I thought it was wrong. They showed this year they could interpret their suspensions a certain way when they suspended him earlier in the season. I just thought it was a bad look. Last night doesn't bother me as much as it bothers a lot of other people, I guess. Like, it's really split out there. I mean, Twitter is a polarizing thing to begin with. in the first place. But you could see last night, you know, battle lines being drawn not only on the ice but all over the internet on whether or not this was good or bad. You know, like one night of this, it doesn't make me too crazy, but you don't want to have it 40 times a year. I understand that. You know, the thing about Perrault, like, obviously we know how the league felt about the statement. Someone made a great point to me, though, Justin. They said, if you really wanted, for argument's sake, George Perrault out of the position, the worst thing you could do is make that statement. Because if you know Gary Bettman, there's no way that George Perrault is going anywhere now, because he's like, people will say, Bettman was, the Rangers statement worked. Like, that's just not the way Bettman works. But I do agree with you on one thing. I do think that that position is probably the most high-stress position in the league, and nobody wants to do it for a long time. Nobody.
One more thing on the Rangers here, and then we'll let you get on with what I'm assuming is a busy day. General manager comes in. Generally, the thought is he brings in his own crew.
Yep.
Who are some of the names that he's close with? Who are some of the guys I know that he's close with and has worked with and played with someone like Daniel Briere, for example? But who are some other names that Chris Drury, that you could see Chris Drury surrounding himself with?
You know, I don't have a great answer for you on that one yet. Briere is definitely one that jumped into my head. You know, the fact that Sather is taking, like, we all thought that maybe he'd want like a veteran there, somebody who's been around. Well, he's got Sather there now, right? So that kind of answers that. I think the other thing too is, are there going to be more changes in the front office there? Are they going to, like, are there going to be more people or anything like that? I think we just, I can't give you a great answer on that one yet, Jeff, until I get a better idea of the landscape.
Before we let you go, I shouldn't say the big story, but one of the big stories coming out of that Ranger Capitals game was TJ Oshie.
Yeah. There were
a couple of really emotional stories last night. David Backes with the Anaheim-St. Louis game last night, and the interview with Panger and the family video and everything, that was real special. But I'll tell you, man, you know, I lost my dad a couple of years ago, and seeing TJ Oshie, and we all remember what happened with TJ Oshie and how he talked about his dad when he won. Yeah, right, with Scott Oak. And boy, I'll tell you, that was a heartstrings moment last night in a game that was filled with ultra violence. There was a whole lot of compassion and tenderness around TJ Oshie last night.
Stewie, what's your dad's line? Do you have a team or a club?
Yep.
Last night we saw the Washington Capitals have a team. Mm-hmm. The way those guys reacted to him.
Yep, for sure.
At the end of, in the post game and even on the bench and on the ice, that meant a lot to those guys. And how could you, like, you're completely heartless if you weren't taken by that. You've got no soul.
Absolutely. great moment for TJ Oshie with the hat trick for his father last night. On that, we'll let you go. Should be a busy day. We'll see what happens with the Department of Player Safety and the Pavel Buchnevich situation with the high stick on Anthony Mantha. This story, much to Stewie's chagrin and his Twitter feed's chagrin, is anything but over. But this interview is. Thanks, Freach.
All right, guys. Have a great afternoon.
Thanks, Elliot.
There he is. Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada, NHL on Sportsnet, and 31 Thoughts. What did you guys make of Oshie last night? There was a moment there where Morgan Barron tried to go at him when all the fights were happening. It was going to be fight number 7. And I'm like, no. Like, of all the players that anyone on the Rangers should not go after, it's, you know, the guy who's just back after his father passed away. Like, read the room here. Like, go after anybody else. Don't go after that guy. Anyway, what did you think of TJ Oshie last night, Justin?
Super special. It's seeing the interview after they won the cup, man. Elliot's right. Super tugging on the heartstrings, that one. And, you know, happy for him that he got to have that moment. And I'm sure there's a lot that goes into that moment for him. Those are complex situations with their family and relationships. So it was uplifting, but at the same time, sure, I'm sure it was a hard night for Oshie. So, you know, happy he had a good night, though.
Last word to you, Stewie. TJ Oshie.
Yeah, it was definitely a moment that I can relate with. I lost my mom second year pro, actually, right before playoffs. And, you know, to be able to play a game, you know, a couple days after is definitely tough. I actually had to take a full week off, and I tried to come back, and I was actually, you know, physically sick because I was so drained. So it's definitely great. But the one thing I can tell you, time flies, and you forget about all your troubles when you're at the rink with your boys. So it's great that he has good support from his teammates, and, yeah, you know, it's great to see TJ Oshie score that hat trick for his dad.
Yeah, that was outstanding. On that, we'll take a break. We'll come back and talk about some of the games on the go around the NHL this evening. And who knows what's next from the Rangers. If you missed the news, fined earlier, about a half an hour ago, $250,000 for their comments, calling essentially for the head of George Parros, the sheriff in the Department of Player Safety, and Pavel Buchnevich has a hearing for the high stick on Anthony Mantha. So this story continues, and we've got you covered here on Hockey Central. More in moments. Anthony Stewart, Justin Bourne, and yours truly, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Hockey Central on the air Monday to Friday at noon. Merrick alongside Stewart and Bourne. How's your day going, Stewie?
It's going well. I've just been getting roasted for drinking my Tim Hortons coffee. I'm usually a Starbucks guy, but Maddie's giving it to me. But I said the reason why I got the Tim Hortons coffee is because I really wanted one of those freshly cracked eggs bagels. Egg and cheese bagels from Tim Hortons. They're great. I can recommend
those. Angling for a sponsorship? Personal sponsorship?
Hey, holy smokes. That's it. First of all, that's an extra 30 on the bike right there, Stewie. I know you rode yesterday.
Yeah,
after the
I know.
Show. You got home,
I know.
You got on the bike, so that's an extra 30.
You
right
got a Peloton?
There.
I got the Peloton app.
Okay. Yeah, I guess what's the difference? Really, it's a spinning wheel.
I got my TV on my spin bike.
There you go.
I'm same. I just get on the bike and I watch Peaky Blinders. That's it. And I watch an episode and then I get off. Okay, so Leafs facing off against the Habs tonight. Montreal dropped a tough one last night to the Ottawa Senators. Before you get into the Leafs and the Habs, are the Ottawa Senators better than two teams in the North that are in playoff positions right now? Like, if the Ottawa Senators didn't have that start, would the Ottawa Senators be in third place in the North right now, Justin?
No, I'm not taking the bait on that.
Come on, cheese in the trap, go for it, take it.
No, they're not there yet. These rebuilds are slow and steady, and teams go on runs of good and bad. And you can't be a terrible, terrible team to have a good run. So they're better than we thought they were at the start of the season. But I'm still not buying this is one of the best, you know, even middle of the pack teams yet.
All right, let's see if Stewie will pick up what I'm putting down.
Well,
what do you think, Stu?
I'm buying that they are playing better hockey, and they dominated that game. And what I like about this now, because I was in this position, you know, you're out of the playoffs, you know, the season's done. I'm packing it in. I'm looking for my flights and my golf trips to Jamaica. And I don't really care how the season goes the last 10, 15 games, but DJ Smith really is changing the culture here where these young guys, it's going to be so valuable for their futures in the league now. Guys like Tkachuk and Brännström, Nick Paul, Batherson, they're learning what it's like, you know, the daily grind of the National Hockey League, and they're not just getting pounded. So I'm telling you, this group overall, this core group will be better off than the group that's in Detroit, because those guys are just getting pounded every single night, and that has a long-term effect. So I would not be surprised next year if Ottawa fast-tracks this thing and makes the playoffs.
Wow. That's going to be a tough division, because guess who's coming
back? And if they don't do it, I didn't say it.
that's the best rule about sports radio.
Awesome.
You only clip the things that work out.
Burn the tape. I did not say that about the Ottawa Senators. I'm A. Stewart. Okay, so Leafs and Habs tonight. Oh, who's got the doorbell there? Is that you, Stewie? That a delivery? Where's your dog,
Gary Bettman?
Where's your dog, dude? I thought your dog would be going crazy right now.
It's Gary Bettman.
Leafs Habs tonight. Justin, you go. Floor is yours. Stewie's got to get a delivery at the front door.
Well, interesting to see how Stefan Nason looks in his debut as a Toronto Maple Leaf. Pierre Engvall getting a little slot on the fourth line. Just some interesting stuff, I think, has come out of Leafland of late. One of the things being Sheldon Keefe's recent quotes about Freddie Anderson, which were basically that they're going to keep an eye on him with the Marlies and hopefully gets back to form, but that he's not going to make any commitment about who's going to start for game one. And he says, best case scenario, we have a tough decision on our hands, which to me reads like they're comfortable going with Jack Campbell, but yeah. You know, if Freddie goes in there and plays really well, you got to have a different conversation, but it's incumbent on Freddie to go and play well.
Does it not feel to you like they're expecting that not to happen?
I guess a little bit, yeah. More than I would anticipate with a comment like that. But I guess you got to give Jack some credit.
You do have to give Campbell some credit, but I read a comment like that. And what's the old saying? You never let a player injure himself out of a position, injure himself out of the lineup. Like, okay, if you're injured and that's why you're not in the lineup, you go back right into that spot. I mean, if you were happy with Freddie before he left to take care of his issue, you're not saying things like, well, maybe you'll have to force a decision and don't know what we're doing. Like, you kind of, especially goaltending and especially playoffs and goaltending, like, don't you kind of stand up for your guy in that situation? Like, what am I missing here, Justin? What am I missing here?
I think there's a sense of, like, Jack Campbell has become a big part of that group and in the dressing room, and you don't want to undermine what he's done, how well he's played, and how important you view him as, because there's a real chance he's going to be the guy. So a lot of my cases for how to handle the goaltending situation in Toronto has been about preserving the ego and relationship of the guy who's definitely your starter. Well, if who you perceive as who's definitely your starter, you have to change whose ego you're protecting. And this feels like they're protecting Campbell's ego a little bit, that this is now on Freddie to come play his way into a goalie competition.
What do you think, Stewie?
I think we got to go a layer deeper right now. The playoffs are coming up right now too. So I think this is Sheldon Keefe really not tipping his hand on what's going to be happening in the playoffs. And you can tell by the lineup now, Joe Thornton's on the top line. You got Pierre Engvall coming in, Nason getting his first game in too. So I think they're just shuffling things now, because now Montreal or even, the Winnipeg Jets are starting to do, you know, their homework and getting their video and saying these are their tendencies. So same thing with the goaltending right now. Whatever the MO is on Freddie Anderson, say it's, he gets beat low on a lot of those goals. Freddie's been working on that the last couple months or a couple weeks, getting ready for these playoffs in case he comes in, because you don't want to now come in with that team 110% prepared for you. You want to have some curveballs. So I'm sure Maple Leafs right now are working on some different power play options. They got some different looks because they know Montreal and the Winnipeg Jets are now taking notes, really zoning in on their tendencies for the playoffs in the first round.
So this is what the lines look like today at practice and what we expect tonight against the Montreal Canadiens. Matthews, Marner, and Joe Thornton. Great line from Joe Thornton today, comparing himself to a chameleon. Not exactly untrue either. Tavares, Nylander, and Galchenyuk. Kerfoot, Mikheyev, and Stefan Nason, as you mentioned a second ago. Old Plymouth Whaler under Mike Folucci. Spezza centering the fourth line with Pierre Engvall and Wayne Simmonds. Riley Brody, Muzzin Hall, Sandin, and Dermott. Jack Campbell and Dave Vertic are your goaltenders. Campbell gets a start tonight for the Maple Leafs. Any expectations for Stefan Nason, who was the who's that guy for some people in the Nick Foligno trade?
No, I have no expectations. You know, I don't know that he was, brought in as someone expected to be much of a contributor, but shoring up the depth is always good. I hope he gets a couple of games at least. You know, it's not all like, go in there, play one game, and we'll decide if we're ever going to use you again. But whatever it's going to be is a small sample, and I would say they fairly intend on having him out of the lineup unless things go badly awry. But still, I think it's fun. You know, we talked about the Senators playing with no expectations. He's in the same boat. You go make an impression. If you don't, well, no one expected much anyway.
Dewey, what do you think?
Well, I do remember Justin saying the same thing about Galchenyuk. I don't know. We'll have to check the tape that's burned on that one too. But, you know, if you're a team that's going on a deep playoff, you're not just going to use the same 12 guys. You're going to have different guys coming in and out of the lineup interchangeable. So I think now they're going to be auditioning, saying, hey, you know, say we're down a guy and we need someone that's a big, strong body on the right side. Can he come in and slot in? So I think you need different guys, different types of players. And I think it's just him giving Sheldon Keefe, giving him his opportunity to see if he can do the job if called upon in the playoffs.
Do we have a thought on the Montreal Canadiens? I mean, they really, listen, Ottawa has been, you know, a tough out for a lot of teams here for a little while now. But where are we at right now, or where are you guys at with the Montreal Canadiens? It seems as if, you know, Jeff Petrie continues to perform. Nick Suzuki continues to perform. When it gets to 3-on-3, watch out for Cole Caulfield, because the guy is dynamite. But, man, to me, there's still a whole lot of question marks, Borny, about the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah, I would say the same ones remain, right? It's just like, you know, the goal scoring is going to be an issue for them. But, you know, you look for teams and how they play in big moments here. And I felt like Montreal was kind of finding their, you know, they won a couple of hockey games and played their way into the conversation of the 2-3 series instead of the 1-4 series in the first round. You know, had an opportunity last night against a team that, yeah, Ottawa's playing well, but you're supposed to be better than Ottawa. So disappointing performance, I thought, in that game. And that seemed to happen with a little bit of consistency in the postseason. It's part of the reason that, like the Flames, I can't buy on Montreal. Every time there's any positive momentum, they seem to find a way to kick themselves in the butt a little bit.
Yeah, it just seems that since Gallagher's been injured, that they just have a trouble finding their identity. And it's just like to be successful, it's like one guy has to step up and have a huge game. Josh Anderson steps up, or Tyler Toffoli, or, you know, Perry does a job too. But you need four lines rolling in the playoffs too. And I think there's going to be too much pressure on guys like Suzuki and Kotkaniemi, who had good playoff series last year, to really carry this group, or rely on defense and Petrie and Weber when he gets back too. And who knows how Carey Price is going to be if he comes back, you know, for playoffs as well. So there's too many variables right now that where it's just like you're almost hoping to get the win, and that's not going to be successful for the Canadiens or any team in the league.
You know, one player, and Elliot mentioned him yesterday in our pregame, someone that's had a better second half than first half, and there's a decision coming up on him because he's an impending UFA. And over the past few seasons, we've seen him on Selke ballots and has appeared in the top five, and that's Philip Deneau. And if you're Austin Matthews tonight, you can expect to see a whole lot of Philip Deneau every time you're on the ice. I should have mentioned, I'm glad you mentioned him, Tyler Toffoli has had a fantastic season for the Montreal Canadiens. Like, that is one of the best off-season signings based on performance against compensation. $4.25 million, and the guy's given you 28 goals.
Yeah, it's
such a good deal.
It's something like, in terms of players who have scored the highest percentage of their team's goals, last I checked, he was third in the NHL. Like, Austin Matthews has 20% or more than 20% of the Leafs' goals this season. Toffoli's right behind that number. I think he's at 18.3% of the Canadiens' goals have been scored by Tyler Toffoli for, 4.25. Canucks kind of missing that a little bit this year, I imagine.
Yeah, they hung on to a couple of guys, and I'm sure they'd like mulligans on and let Tyler Toffoli go. But Stuart, you're right. Like, the big question still around the Montreal Canadiens is, where is the goal scoring going to come from? And, you know, so Cole Caulfield eventually is going to be a full-time 5-on-5 sniper in the NHL. But right now, in six games, both of his goals happened in the 3-on-3. In the overtime on great setups by Jeff Petrie. So is he there yet? No. Do you expect him to be there yet? No, of course you don't. But the one player that I keep coming back to from the Habs, and we keep seeing consistently game in and game out, you know, he's the best at breaking out the puck out of their own zone. And Stewie, we talked about mustache envy on the show a little bit, and that is Jeff Petrie. Stewie, what do you make of 26 on Montreal? Because that's one of the best deals Montreal has made, like, as far as
players. Oh, for sure. And it gets me upset. It gets me upset because I used to have coaches always yell at me, Stewie, too casual. And that just looks, you know, his game coming up and down the ice with the puck. He's just going at his own pace. No real panic in his game. He's got the poise with the puck. And he always makes that right play, that first pass. And to see a guy not be the most offensively gifted or physically gifted to really take control of the game, that just shows what type of cerebral player he is too. So some people are putting him in that Norris conversation. I would too, because what he's doing in this North Division with not the strongest group of the Montreal Canadiens, excuse me.
Yeah, that's probably going to be, that Norris race is probably going to be, you know, Borny, probably going to be Victor Hedman and Adam Fox from the Rangers. But you're right, Jeff Petrie is going to be in that conversation. Like, he's going to get a vote. Shea Theodore is going to get some votes as well. Do you have a thought on Petrie here before the game tonight? Mr. Bourne, paging Mr. Bourne.
Petri dish.
Me and my mute button don't get along. I have a thought on Petri, and it's just the idea of too casual and how I think there's something you got to be very careful with is assessing how much of too casual is a really skilled guy making something look easy versus someone not working hard or not bearing down, whatever. And it's, we think we can tell way too often what's what, but it's definitely a point of caution. I know what Stewie's talking about. Some of the best players like Stewie just make it look easy, you know?
there always is. I've always hated, you know, Matt Sundin used to get that in Toronto. Doesn't look like he's working hard, doesn't look like he's trying. Like, big guys, like, don't move like smaller water bugs. I remember having conversations with
my dad.
A lot
hated
people,
that,
like,
too, you know? Great skater, right? Long legs, and these little guys are working their inefficient butts off, and everyone's like, look at him go! And it's like, no, he's just a bad skater.
I've always said, like, compare any of the Sutter brothers to Matt Sundin. Who do you think's working harder? The answer is they're both working hard. Just, you know, any Sutter looks like they're really, really working hard because they're not the most graceful skaters. And so they got to put so much into it. Meanwhile, Sundin had these long, powerful, elegant strides. But would you ever say that Matt Sundin works as hard as a Sutter? I mean, I would, but what do your eyes tell you? Nope. Yeah. You know, that's why I've always been uncomfortable with this idea that, you know, you have to make it look like you're working hard. I've always hated that. Like, if you get the results, you get the results.
I was the king of that. I was the king of that in the bag skate. You're just moving your arms, going quick.
inefficient.
He's working so hard. He's last place in the bag skate, but he's working. Look at him. Yeah.
You know what, though, coach?
Arm movement, kids.
Coaches love that. They love it. Look
coaches
at him. He's dying.
They get sucked in. You know where they get sucked in? And I'll tell you, there's a great story. Who was it? Theo Peckham. You guys remember Theo Peckham? So Theo Peckham at the Combine was the first guy. Now they have curtains and a garbage can where you're going to go. But right outside the VO2 max, so there used to be like a garbage if you're going to throw up. Now guys go into behind curtains because it's become a thing. So Theo Peckham at the Combine 1 year, like, he's on the bike and he's gunning it and gunning it and gunning it. And it's to the point where he has to be sick. Like, he barfs. And all the scouts and coaches, oh, wow, like, oh, look how hard. He worked himself to the point of vomit. Oh, wow, and he's scurrying down all these notes. Oh, this guy, I'll go through a wall for you. And I remember the next year at the Combine, talking to scouts and agents, and they're all saying, listen, every kid's agent has told him about the Theo. And then Peckham ended up going higher in the draft than he normally would have gone, or maybe even just did get drafted, and where there was some question whether he would or not. And then the next year at the Combine, every single kid tried to make himself barf to show the scouts that they were working as hard. Yeah. Now they just
What's
put the guys behind a curtain. But now it's become sort of a tie. Like, hey, man, Peckham did this and he raised his draft stock. You got to go do the same thing. It's so phony. It's so flippin' phony. Just like, you know, to your point, Stewie, make it look like you're working hard so the coach gives you a cookie at the end of all of it, right?
I've told my story before. That's kind of the opposite side of this. Is being at New York Islanders training camp, and you know, some of the stuff they had us do in the actual physical testing was just like, what are we doing here? Like, you know, what are we measuring? And one of them was you just sat on your knees, you know, and kneeled, and you held a medicine ball at your chest and just pushed it through it as far as you could. It was like the most okay, like, whatever. So Bill Guerin got up there, got on his knees, and he dropped the ball essentially where his toes would have been. Like, he couldn't have thrown it 3 inches. And he was just like, I hope he learned something. Like, they literally marked him down for like three inches.
That's now known as the Tom Wilson scrum test. Now you got to push him out of the scrum.
I'll tell you, here's another one for you at Combine. There's one team in the NHL that didn't draft. I don't know if they took him off the list, but I know that they deliberately didn't draft him, even though there were a couple of Western scouts for this team that really wanted him. There was one team in the NHL that didn't draft Braden Point because he had bad force place results at the Combine. And the belief from this team was, if you have bad results at force plate, you'll never play in the NHL.
Yeah, fitness testing is, you know, who's the best of this and who's the worst? Well, everyone else go home.
You know, I remember talking to Matt Nichol about that one. I said, what do you learn from this? Do you like the story? So I'm at the combine with Matt Nichol. I'm like, from your point of view, this is like elite level trainer. I mean, Matty's like creme de la creme. I'm like, Matty, what do you gain from this? And he said, you know, the one thing that I'll walk away from all these results from is where players are prone to injury. That's the main information I get. Like, you would never want a team to make a decision on a player based on, oh man, he was bad at force plate or he was bad at VO2 max, like as far as playing in the NHL. But for Matty, this always stuck with me, where they are prone to injury. And you can tell that through the combine. Okay, little detour there. Quick pause, more Hockey Central, get a hustle. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We're back in a moment. Welcome back to the program. Game day for the Toronto Maple Leafs. They face off against the Montreal Canadiens this evening. Six games on the go around the NHL. Thankfully for the Rangers, they've only got two more games left. One of them, well, both against the Boston Bruins. Tonight they'll face off against the Bees in Boston. This is a season that can't end soon enough for the New York Rangers. We have the Habs and the Leafs, Canucks and the Oilers tonight as well. And Justin, when the Oilers are playing, what are we watching?
Let's see McDavid get to 100 tonight, Jeff. Just get weird.
So, Stewie, we made the point. Justin was making the point yesterday that if McDavid is going to get to 100, the odds are pretty good. Probably he's going to get like 104 and just put up a five spot somewhere along the way here as he chases 100. Agree, disagree?
I think so, but I want to be hot take Tuesday guy. I think that Austin Matthews is going for 40 goals because McDavid could catch him. He's got to get 42, 43. And we're ending the show here. Whoa,
that was quick. Smith and Jones next.